Susan, what's up?
Jordan, good
What's up?
morning.
Susan Niebergall,
This is
fitness.
coffee talk.
This is coffee talk. This is iced coffee talk for me. This is hot coffee talk for you. I
Hot
love
coffee talk for me.
coffee talk.
Coffee
Coffee.
talk. Yeah.
Welcome to coffee talk.
Coffee talk. No wine this time, just coffee.
I haven't thought about that skit in many years. Oh, that
Oh, a
was
million
so cool.
years. Yeah.
Oh my God. This is coffee talk where we talk about what was it? Oh my God, what was that line? Internal combustion, neither internal nor combustion. How are you feeling?
Okay, I guess.
You've got your hip replacement surgery
In
on Monday.
yeah, six
In a
days.
couple days, 6 days. That's crazy. That's
Yeah.
like, I'm excited for you.
You've been on this journey the whole time.
I mean, I'm stoked. This is a very long time coming,
Yeah.
and I'm just like, I'm ready for you to be relieved of the chronic, intense pain
Yeah,
that
yeah.
you've been in for years.
Yeah, it's been the intense stuff's been probably the better part of a year now, and even more recent than that, probably nonstop now for several months. It just won't stop. I had the absolute worst day on Sunday. I've never felt anything like that ever. I couldn't do anything. And
Oh, yeah.
it not only affects just my ability to move around, but it affects my appetite. It affects how I think. I don't feel like doing anything. Like
Yeah.
I can't focus to get anything accomplished because everything hurts, So yeah, I'll be glad when that's done.
Yeah, I mean, even just watching you, like when you're sitting down and you're constantly having to
Yeah, I
adjust
mean,
and
I'm
like,
sitting here with my heel up as close to my butt as I can get it because that's the only way I get relief. Like I can sit normally for a little while and then,
yeah.
yeah,
And then
I
when you
can't do
stand
that.
up, you're like limping for a little bit. And it's just like, yeah, there's so much. I will say one of the really unique things from my perspective, and I think it for people who, it's funny, people get a little injury and then they feel like, oh my God, I can't work out.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you've had chronic pain for so long now and you haven't stopped working out. It's not that it hasn't affected your workouts, but you've been able to work around it. And I think it's been such a really a wonderful opportunity for you to explain and to actually show in real time. Listen, if you've got pain, you don't work through it, you just work around it. And so
Yeah.
it's been a great teaching tool, unfortunately, at your expense.
But good for me too, though, I think, to remind myself on the times where I really just don't feel like doing stuff that I can still do stuff,
Yeah.
I mean, it's been good for me too. And I've filmed a bunch of clips for a part one of a YouTube thing. I haven't been on YouTube in so long, so I figured, well, I might as well use this to kind of come back on a little bit, just to show everybody what it's been like day to day. Just little snippets, nothing like long and involved, but things that people don't see. How I walk, how I have to sit, how sometimes I can't get up off the floor, things like that. And then my workouts too. I have some snippets of things that we have worked on together for my workouts, and then how I've even had to change that of late. I mean, leg days are, it depends on how I feel that day as to what I'm going to do,
Right.
and it sometimes it's not a whole lot, but I can do whatever I can do. The one thing I have changed drastically is that over the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 months, when I knew this date was coming, my goal was hip. I have to touch my hip every single day. I have to do something for it every single day. And not for people to think that I'm working it to failure and I'm doing all these things that you're not supposed to do every single day, but I am touching it and making sure that my glutes are always firing, that I'm getting as strong as I can. And I switch around. I have a handful of exercises that I just rotate through. And then
Smart.
I
Well,
add a machine here and there whenever I can. I mean, my leg days have just been like on the fly almost.
I think what's important to recognize here is when you're doing stuff to strengthen your hip and your glutes and all of that right now, it's not strength training from the perspective of doing super heavy squats, super heavy hip thrusts, super heavy Bulgarians. It's you're doing these smaller exercises, right? Like that you can do on a daily basis. You're not going to failure, but it's important to recognize, again, this is a perfect example of you have to do with like what you have to use what you have available to you. And you still do those other exercises, but you're not doing those big ones every day. You're not training, you're not lifting heavy every day. You can still do these smaller exercises on a daily basis, because any strength that you have post-surgery will be a tremendous benefit to you. So getting as strong as you can now will be significantly more beneficial than like, ah, I'm just not going to do anything, end up losing so much strength, losing so much muscle, then their recovery is going to be way, way more difficult.
That's been the driving focus. And, lifting heavy for me right now, leg wise, is very relative. There really, I mean, what I compared to what I used to do, there really isn't. Although I will say this, I have a habit of doing this. You already know this. I sell myself short a lot of times with this particular thing about
You?
thinking I just did it to myself the other day. One exercise for me that's been a staple that you programmed for me, and I've always done it ever since, is the dead stop single leg RDL. For some reason, that's been a huge challenge for me with this hip. But I went from no weight to I moved 50 pounds the other day.
Oh, wow.
And so, just when I'm thinking, God, I've lost this. I haven't been able to do this, blah, blah, blah. Hello, newsflash. No, I really haven't.
Yeah.
This hurts like a dog, but I still have some strength and muscle in there. It was a good reminder.
I mean, I think a dead stop is significantly harder than a regular single leg RDL. And never mind that. Let's think about, if we're going to talk about relative, let's compare 63-year-old women. Like, let's look at this entire population of people. How many 63-year-old women do you think can do an RDL, like a bilateral RDL on both feet with 50 pounds? Not many are doing that, right? Never mind on one fucking leg. Never mind with the dead stop variation. It's like the relative amount of strength that you have, especially in your population, is wild. But then let's look at like how many 25-year-old women do you think can do coming from an untrained background, how many can do an RDL with 50 pounds? Never mind a single leg RDL, a single leg dead stop. Like, your strength, it absolutely is wild. I mean, we could even look at how many 25-year-old dudes could do a single leg RDL with 50 pounds. Like, not many. I guarantee you, the vast majority of them couldn't do it. So, it is very important for you to look at, not necessarily like there are movements that are going to really aggravate your hip, whether it's a regular deadlift or whatever it is, but just look at the single leg RDL and see that how much stronger you've gotten in that movement is equally as valid as any other lower body lift. So that's incredible.
I do pay the price for any leg day now. Any and working my hip in any way has been, there's a significant price to pay by the end of that day into the next day. And I've had to accept that because the price will be worth it on the other side of this, So I think part of what was happening this weekend, I must have really pissed it off or something. I don't know. It
Yeah.
was like outrageously bad.
You've been pissing it off for a long time now.
And I've stopped jujitsu. This is not how I wanted to stop it before the surgery, but the 2 weeks prior, I started feeling sick again, and I was in bed for 3 days, and I'm like, I can't risk being around in such close proximity
Correct.
to people like that. So I had thought I'd go all the way up to the end of this week, honestly, but I couldn't. So I'll get back over there and start watching as soon as I get mobile enough. Hopefully by the end of next week, I'll be able to go over.
Well, it makes sense now that I've learned about it, but for anyone listening who doesn't know, like, 'cause I didn't know the first time, when you were scheduled for your hip surgery months ago, but you ended up having a cold. And they couldn't accept you because you had just a regular cold. It wasn't crazy. It was just you had a little cold, and they can't do a surgery on you when you are sick, which I didn't realize that. But again, it makes total sense retrospectively. Like, okay, yeah, I get that now. But yeah, you have to essentially isolate yourself to make sure that you give yourself every chance of keeping your immune system high and not getting sick before you go into a surgery where they literally cut you open and expose you to potentially more issues.
And
So that makes sense.
It's definitely that. And also the anesthesiologist, they evidently put their foot down with any kind of respiratory, anything, you know. They did tell me that if you have like just a sniffles or an allergy, that's not a big deal. But when you start getting other cold symptoms like extreme fatigue or maybe even fever or whatever, you know, severe congestion, whatever, all that, that's a big no-no. So, so far, I am good to go. So
good, good. All right. I love it. What else is going on aside from this life-changing surgery?
Yeah, that's pretty much dominating my life and everything I'm doing this whole week, you know. And we have a big week. This is a big week for us. It's a huge week. So, which is good because I really have not planned on anything this week because I knew I was going to be here in my house all week. So, I have a lot of time carved out for for the app launch this week, which is great.
Yeah, the Inner Circle app is launching. Yeah. So, by the time, if you're listening to this within the first 24 to 48 hours of this going live, then you only have maybe that amount of time before the price doubles in the Inner Circle. Yeah. The new app is launching. The price is doubling. We haven't increased the price since 2017. We are unbelievably excited and a huge amount of work has gone into this. So, if you want to get into the Inner Circle at the lowest price, and again, I've said this a million times, Susan has as well, but if you join before the price doubles and you stay an active member, your price will never increase. So if you join right now, your price will never increase as long as you stay an active member. If you wait to join 1 minute after the price increases, then you're going to be paying double the price.
Yeah.
So, and we've been giving, like, literally this is over a month. Well, actually more, I think it's been over 2 months now of warning. So if you want in, this is your chance. You can get in at the lowest price it will ever be from now on, from here on out. We have a nutrition tracker, barcode scanner, workouts. You can substitute the workouts. You have dumbbell workouts you can do at home. You can do full comprehensive workouts with strength equipment. We have a mobility program coming before the summer. Like, we have so much in there. It's absolutely wild. So if you want to join, now is the time.
Yeah, for sure. I was answering a lot of emails this morning about people having questions about the Inner Circle. And I just said, P.S., prices are going to go up this week. So you better come in now.
Yeah. So anything else going on? I mean, you're going to be Dota times two. You're going to be an aunt.
I am like through the roof about being a double Dota. I can't wait. I cannot wait to have another. How do you say niece in Hebrew again? I think you told me when I was there. The equivalent.
Yeah. So it's, Now I think I'm about to say cousin instead. For some reason I'm thinking it's achyanit, but hold on. Let me see. Sorry. It's nechdoda. It's nechdoda is going to be the niece. Yep. Well,
I can't wait to have another nechdoda.
Wow. That was good. That was very good.
I cannot wait. How are you all doing with all of that?
We're good. So my wife has been unbelievably nauseous. Like,
still?
Oh, yeah. Oh. Which this has been a much more difficult pregnancy than the first one.
Mm.
A lot more nausea and yakking, I believe is the medical term for it. But everything's good. We're very excited. So God willing, everything will work out. Everything will be okay. And old Abe is... she's just, it's crazy. It's such a crazy age. I feel every day she's learning new things.
Yeah.
It's just, it's rapid. So actually today's the 27th. Today's the 27th. So she's 18 months today.
Wow. And
it's just, it's really crazy because at this point she can hear you say a word and she knows the word. So like she hears you say it and then like she'll start trying to use it immediately, which is very crazy. So for example, we wanted to get a picture of her at the land, you know, the land where we're building. Mm-hmm. They're going to be breaking ground tomorrow, which is amazing. We want to get a picture of her on the land before anything is built. And so we got her these like cute little shovels that like, just to make it look like, you know, she's shoveling on the land. And it was my mom's idea. I thought it was a really good idea.
That was a great idea.
And so we got her these cute little shovels from Amazon. They were like $5 and they're like pink and blue and yellow. And so I was like, do you want a shovel? And I was like, you can dig with the shovel. And then she starts saying, dig, dig. Like she just, now she knows dig. And so every, like in
Wow.
the morning when I wake up, she goes, she's like, dig, dig. She just wants the shovels. It's just, it's very crazy how immediately she's learning things.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very, very cool. And now she can reach up and pull the door handle down so she can open doors, which is just not good. So,
That's kind of, oh
but
boy.
everything is great, and we're excited and nervous, and then we're actually, I haven't said this, but we're getting a dog soon as well. So as if things couldn't get crazier, we're getting a dog in, I think, 3 3.5 weeks now, getting a golden retriever.
Oh, so the next time I'm there,
Yep, next time you're there, we're gonna have a little
yes.
puppy.
Oh,
Yeah, things are crazy in the Syatt household.
Dota to a dog, too. I'll take that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly. And you love golden retrievers too. So
Oh,
they're such a good dog.
yes. That's going to be fun.
Yeah. No sleep, zero sleep.
No. It's so funny when we were talking about this. I'm like, yeah, I had any sleep for a lot of different reasons than you, but yeah, no sleep club either, essentially.
Do you want to do a little Q&A?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So I got a couple of questions. This is one that we can, there's a lot that we can do with this, but we'll just start this it said nay 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 asked skinny fat. What does that mean? I feel like we could talk a lot about skinny fat and all that, but this is, it's funny. When I was younger, skinny fat, it was like almost assumed what that meant. I feel like there weren't any questions about it. But in the last few years, I've gotten a lot of people asking, what does that actually mean? Can you talk about what does skinny fat mean? And then we'll go into training and nutrition around how to combat skinny fat, how to get over skinny fat.
You know, it's interesting because skinny fat was never a thing when I was younger. It
Oh,
was
interesting.
you were either skinny or you were fat. I mean, there was like, you know, it was like the scale goes up, that's bad, it goes down, that's good. There's none of the gray, you know. And
So it was
skinny
all
fat,
based on the scale, not based on how you looked. Interesting. Okay.
So if the scale ever went up, that was a bad thing, right? And if
Yep,
it
yep,
went
yep.
down, that was a good thing.
Yep,
And
yep.
that's how you base how you felt. That's why doctor's office visits were so traumatic, because if you stepped on the scale and it went up from where you were before, you know, you'd get the look from the nurse, or you know, all this, and then you feel like crap. Anyway, so skinny fat wasn't around, but skinny fat really is someone who is pretty lean already. They don't have a ton of like visible fat. They're not overweight. But they do have some fat on their body, right? And to them, it's very noticeable. Maybe to other people, it might not be as noticeable, but to them, it is noticeable. And I think skinny fat is also more of an absence of muscle than it is anything else,
That's it. Yep. That's
you know?
exactly.
And so it looks like you have a teeny little bit of fat, when really, instead of thinking about losing the last little bit of fat, and this is where people get confused because they
Yes.
always hear to lose fat, you have to be in a calorie deficit, blah, blah, blah. But when you have that teeny tiny little bit of fat, that becomes like brutal trying to lose that. It's not, it there comes a point in time where it's not about losing anymore, right? It's about gaining and turning the corner and going the other way, which is really scary for a lot of people, you
Yeah.
know?
I think you nailed it. I think I'll start actually with this, because some people lately, it's so funny, people never used to be offended by this, but now all of a sudden people get offended by calling you that. It's not something to be offended about. It's just a simple way to describe a look, right? It's an easy way. If you want, we could go into like more like scientific terms, but then you're not going to fucking understand it. Skinny fat is a simple way to understand what it looks like, where the way that I usually describe it is, if they have a shirt on, you're like, they oh, this is, they're skinny. They take the shirt off, it's like, oh, they're actually a little bit chubbier than I thought. That's skinny fat, where it's like you, they're overall, they're skinny, but they've got a little bit of chunk of fat on there, oftentimes in the belly, and they're not fat. They're just, they've got a little bit of extra fat. And when I say a little bit, I have to be very clear. It's not the people on social media who pinch like a little bit of their skin and say, look, I'm like you, I've got fat rolls. Like, no, it's like they have like a, they could grab it, like grab a chunk of fat. I think what you hit on, which is absolutely the probably the most important part, is it's an absence of muscle. Right. So, like, for example, if I like, I'm not jacked by any means, but through powerlifting for years and strength training for years, like, I have a more muscle than the average dude my height and weight. And so, if I lost a huge percentage of my muscle and stayed the same amount of fat, I would be skinny fat. But because I have much more muscle, I'm not skinny fat. I'm just like, I have muscle with a little bit of extra fat. And so it's that difference where it's like, if I lost a lot of my muscle, then it would look more skinny fat. And I think the major issue that people have when they are operating from a place of, I'm not skinny, I'm not fat, I'm skinny fat, is they are like, well, should I? They start trying to lose the fat first, when in reality is at that point, you should really start trying to build more muscle. That's going to be the most helpful thing, not just from an aesthetic perspective, but also I think from a health perspective, performance perspective. I think that's going to be the thing that makes training more fun, life more fun. Because at that point, going into a deficit, like being in a deficit always sucks, and it's not going to help you build muscle at that point. You should go into the gym, lift heavy, increase your protein, and really focus on building muscle.
Yeah, I think people that try to lose that last little bit of fat end up really disappointed at the end. I mean, because they had to sacrifice so much to do it for the first thing. And then the second thing is they look at themselves and they're like, that's it. Like they envision all the leanness and tone, whatever you want to call it, that's not there because you didn't build anything along the way. And so building is definitely the answer. And you and I have both said numerous times that losing those last couple of pounds or that last little bit of fat is completely overrated, from a life perspective, even happiness perspective, perhaps. But yeah, building's necessary. But the issue becomes when people are nervous to increase their calories into more of a maintenance mode to be able to do that. You know, because the scale goes up and then we don't realize what that actually is and what it's not, you know? And I think that is the emotional conflict people have with this.
I completely agree. I think that's super well said. And I think people radically underestimate how much a couple pounds of muscle added to their physique would change how they look. I think losing a couple pounds of fat will not do nearly as much for your physique as gaining a couple pounds of muscle. And you know, even if we look at the timeline of that, losing a couple pounds of fat can take a couple weeks. You could actually do it in a week if you really wanted to go a little bit faster. But if you do it relatively slow, a couple weeks, lose a couple pounds of fat. You can't build a couple pounds of muscle in a couple weeks. Building a couple pounds of muscle takes a much longer time, and it's more difficult. With like building muscle is radically more difficult than losing fat. So even though it's the same amount total in terms of weight, building a couple pounds of muscle will completely, on a whole separate level, change how you look. And it's not, people oftentimes, women think, oh my God, a couple pounds of muscle, I'm gonna get bulky. No, it's not how it works. It's not like a couple pounds of muscle isn't gonna make you bulky. It's going to actually make you more toned and defined. And the cool part is, when you have more muscle, you can actually be a higher body fat percentage and still look leaner. That's one of the craziest parts about it is, if you have more muscle, you can actually carry more fat and still look leaner.
I feel like the person that's really scared to do this, if they would just get over that fear and do it, how they're going to feel on the other side after they're in kind of the workout loop with all of this and they're in a groove with it, and then start to see how they've changed over time. What a change, a life-changing thing, you know? I mean, it's incredibly empowering and life-changing. You're no longer scared of the scale going up anymore or anything because you understand what's happening, but you
Correct.
have to get over the initial fear of the scale went up. Oh, that must be fat kind of stuff because that's the initial thing. The scale's going up. You know, how many times do we hear people reaching out to us, sometimes even in the inner circle, that they're panicked about that initial little bump in the scale? It doesn't mean you're gaining fat, you know, and unless you're scarfing down everything known to mankind, you're not gaining fat. People just have to understand more about scale fluctuations. And I always send them to your video because you explain that so well. And it kind of maybe allays their fears as to what's actually happening. But I think if you can get over that hump, man, being in maintenance and building muscle, that is it. That's where it's at.
The best.
That's where it's at. And just realize that that takes a long time. And
yeah.
thinking bigger picture, like years, not a week or two, three, four, you know, a long period of time, and take progress photos along the way, because you may not always see the changes day to day. But when you compare day one to month five or something like that, you're going to start to see your body change shape. It's going to be really cool to see.
Yeah. And with that, not only do you see your body change shape, you could probably hear old Abe in the background. Not only do you start to see your body change shape, but the cool part about being in maintenance is it's so much less restrictive.
Yeah.
It's like 5 months in a deficit sucks balls.
Yeah.
Like, that's awful. Even if it's a moderate deficit, even if it's a very sustainable, like 5 months in a deficit sucks no matter what. Whereas 5 months in maintenance is so much more enjoyable. I would say that being in maintenance is more enjoyable than being in a surplus too.
100% it is.
It's there. There are so many aspects of maintenance, and this is why you and I call it momentum. People hear maintenance and they think like, oh, you're staying the same. You're not staying the same if you're doing it right. You can and you should build muscle in maintenance. And then essentially it's what's called body recomposition. You will very slowly lose fat, very slowly build muscle. It's not as fast progress as you would see in a surplus, nor is it as fast progress as you would see in a deficit. And when I say as fast, I mean visibly. You're not going to see the visible changes as quickly, but it's much more enjoyable and sustainable over the long term. And so that's why in the inner circle, you and I call it momentum, because when you're in maintenance, you just keep building up more and more and more and more momentum. So it's a really, I think it's the best place to be for sure.
Oh,
I will say,
absolutely.
like, if you're starting from a place of you have a lot of body fat to lose, you shouldn't be in maintenance early on. You should be in a fat loss phase. You should be in a calorie deficit. But I would say once you get to a healthier range body fat, and you get, I would say within 10 to 15 pounds of where you want to be, that's a good time to be like, okay, is it worth it staying in a calorie deficit? Or maybe should I switch to maintenance? It's that like last bit of 10 to 15 or so where you can decide. And if you decide, you know what, I still want to be in a deficit, I'm 15 pounds above, I still want to lose a little bit more, cool, that's totally fine. But you have, I think, a much better option now to decide if it's worth it to continue staying there or not.
Yeah, and I think what you just said is super important to point out, that if you have a lot of fat to lose, it's probably best to do that first.
Yes.
Then trying to think, I'm going to go into this muscle building thing, because you could very well build the muscle, but you're going to be very disappointed and upset because you're not going to really see it if you still have a lot of fat to lose. So lose some fat and train like you're building muscle, you know?
Yep.
So that as your fat comes off, you will start to see your, you know, shape start to kind of come to pass and change and all that. But think of it, you're eating to in a deficit to lose weight, and you're training like you're building muscle.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And if anyone has any questions about building muscle, I have a lot of podcasts on that. Actually, I think one of the most recent podcasts I published was exactly the science of building muscle, if you want to go check that one out. Okay, let's look at another question. Okay. Oh, here we go. This will be very triggering for many people. Helsey is alive. Asked, what are your thoughts on Ozempic, Mounjaro, all like the weight loss drugs? What are your thoughts on that?
There's way too many commercials for them, by the way.
Oh, man,
that's my very first thought that comes to mind. I mute the TV or turn it off every single time because I can't stand those commercials anymore. They're awful. That aside.
Sorry to interrupt, but like that should tell you something
when
you look at these companies who are spending billions of dollars advertising it. Like that should just be a clue as to like, okay, something's going on here. There's a lot of money to be, if they're spending that much money on ads, they must be making infinitely more on the back end. Just important to keep in mind, if you keep seeing these ads, there's a reason why, and someone's making an obscene amount of money off of it.
Yeah. It's interesting. I just talked to probably two people within the last month who were both on Ozempic and both decided to get off of Ozempic because of side effects.
What were the side effects?
Mostly gastrointestinal related
Ooh, oh geez.
side effects.
Okay.
They both lost weight while on Ozempic, but they both couldn't keep that up at all. And one of them, I question whether that person really needed to be on it in the first place, was not in that category of obese and really struggling with food noise in their head and all the things. The other one was for sure. But I feel like that there's a time and place for these for a certain population, you know?
Correct.
But the problem now is it's become so widespread that you have the Hollywood crowd that's starting to lose weight really quickly with Ozempic. The last 5 pounds I wanted to lose, or 10, or whatever. They're using it for stuff that really it's not intended to be used for. And so
Correct.
that makes it really appealing. And then depending on the doctor that you see, you know, some doctors won't go down that road at all, and maybe when they should. And then there are some that go down it very, very quickly, you know? So it's very frustrating, I think, from our point of view, just to see so many people struggle with losing weight, and maybe they don't have access to it, when but yet this person that wants to lose 10 pounds to look good for summer somehow was able to get Ozempic and is trying to do that. You know, that's the whole issue I have with all of it. I want it to be able to help the people that truly need the help.
Yes,
And both
correct.
of these people that I talked to that were on it said the food chatter in their head was that helped so much. Ozempic really helped with that.
Yep.
And so that helps them make better decisions. They're not obsessed with food all the time.
Yep.
Those are the people that need that kind of help, you know?
Correct.
Yeah, it's, I think the whole thing with Ozempic has just been one big frustration, to be honest.
Yeah, I think you articulated it perfectly. I think that this day and age, there's no room for nuance anymore. And
Yeah.
it's either you're completely for it or you're completely against it. And there's no gray area, which just leaves zero room for an actual legitimate discussion around it,
Yeah.
which means people don't get help.
Yep.
And it actually ends up where people, even medical professionals, end up like being influenced by their political beliefs as opposed to the scientific literature. And I
Yep.
see this happening all the time. Not just with medical professionals, but all over in every single aspect of life where people are being influenced by their politics and what they're seeing on their social media and not based on scientific literature and the actual facts of the matter. I think that the point that you hit on, which is really important, and they're all really important, but the beginning point that there are some people who really need this. There are some people who it makes complete sense and it's super important. And I was actually explaining it to my wife yesterday. We were on a walk and she wanted to learn more about it. There are some people who, like, we'll start with there are definitely like risks associated with some of the medication. There are real negative side effects that can come with it. But when we're looking at someone who's carrying a significant amount of extra body fat, the risks are worth it to remove that, the even greater
Greater
risk
risk.
of chronic obesity and severely high body fat. So if we're looking at someone who has a very high body fat percentage, the risk of that is way worse than the potential negative side effects of those drugs. So that's number one. So for some people, it makes a lot of sense. Another very commonly touted issue with it is like, oh, well, you're going to have to take it for the rest of your life. There are many drugs that people take for their whole life, and it's not a problem at all. Not to mention, it's like a lot of these people are like, oh, you have to take it your whole life. Meanwhile, these are the people who also take protein powder, which, by the way, I take protein powder almost every day of my life, and it's not a fucking problem. Right. So it's like you're picking and choosing what is okay and not okay to do for the rest of your life. If you do protein powder, do protein powder. You take protein powder like almost every day because it makes it more convenient for you, just like I do, then you shouldn't have a problem with someone taking something for the rest of their life. Like, if God willing, I live until I'm 95 years old, I'll probably be using protein powder until I'm 95 years old because it's such a convenient way to get protein in. Right. It's, and I'll take it all the time. We're at like, so what's the issue with it? And we have to stay logically consistent. I'm not talking about the effects or negative effects of protein powder versus these drugs. I'm talking about purely from the perspective of You have to take it for the rest of your life. And yes, with protein powder, you don't have to take it, but if you're going to, if it's something you do every day for the rest of your life anyway, then you have to abide by the same standard you're placing on them. So I don't like that argument of, oh, it's bad because you have to take it for the rest of your life. So there's that as well. But I think the major thing is for someone who has a lot to lose, it is way more dangerous for them to be significantly overweight than it is to be taking these drugs. And the research is there to support that. Not to mention, one of the major reasons it's so dangerous to stay so high body fat is never mind the physiological effects of having that much body fat, but also the lifestyle factors that often affects that makes it more difficult to get out and move, to exercise, to socialize, like all of the things that come with having a lot of extra body fat that make it more difficult to actually live a healthy life. If we can get that down and remove that, amazing. Like that will be so much more beneficial than the risks associated with the drug in and of itself, at least based on the research we have thus far. The issues start to come from, like you said, that Hollywood crowd, people trying to lose 5, 10, 15 pounds. Like if you've got 15 pounds to lose, even 20 pounds to lose, you shouldn't be on this shit.
It's not for you.
Unless it's not for you, unless like there's another medical reason, which there could be potentially other medical reasons. But if you're purely doing it for aesthetics at 20 pounds, 15 pounds, 10 pounds, whatever, that's a fucking problem. And that's where the money's being made. That's where those advertising dollars are making the money, because then you can, all right, they're targeting the people who are like, well, I just want to lose a little bit of weight just so I can, feel better in a bathing suit. It's like, that's fucking stupid. Then you have these negative side effects that the negative side effects are no longer worth it. They are a way greater risk, because being 20 pounds overweight, 15 pounds overweight, like that's not a life-threatening issue. There are so many things you can do to improve. And realistically, if you're quote unquote only 10 to 15, 20 pounds overweight, you don't have the same food noise or chatter or health issues that someone who's 50, 100, 150, 200 pounds overweight, someone who could actually benefit from these drugs. And then I think that another final tier of this is the more people who are buying it and are taking it, who don't need it, the more difficult it's becoming to get for the people who really do need it, where you're driving up the prices. You're making it far more difficult for the people who truly need it to actually get it. So it becomes a major, major, major issue. And the people who don't need it, I think are taking it, and they're causing far more problems for themselves physically, mentally, emotionally, and for society, for the people who actually do need it and could benefit from it.
And then all of that leads to these commercials that make it sound so appealing and
Yes.
so easy and all this stuff. Oh my God. One of them came on again last night, and Tim just takes the remote and just mutes it. I mean, because he knows I will just like lose my head.
Yeah,
I
that's
can't
funny.
stand
He
it anymore.
knows.
Oh,
It's important. It's an important discussion to have. I think a
it
lot of people
is.
are
It
confused.
is.
Okay, here's an interesting one. And I get this question pretty frequently, and I never answer it. But I think we should answer it now. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on it. Lonlo17 asked, do you consider bodybuilders to be athletes? And if you want, you can Google the definition of an athlete. Do you want me to Google it and then
Yeah, do
explain it?
that.
Okay. I think that's an important thing to do first, just so no one loses their shit. Okay. What is the definition of an athlete? Okay. So let's see, the Merriam-Webster definition of an athlete is a person who is trained or skilled in exercises, sports, or games requiring physical strength, agility, or stamina.
By that definition, then yes, I
Yes,
think. Yeah,
correct.
for sure. For sure. And I probably, even without hearing that definition, I probably would have said yes to that. I think people think athletes more of a movement-based kind of thing for a lot of people, that kind of skill. So maybe a different kind of athlete. That this debate has gone on for people talking about golfers. Are they athletes? Are race car drivers athletes? That comes up a lot, because I've heard some people call race car drivers athletes. They're skilled. They're really skilled. Athletic, I don't know. And then, you think athletic, maybe a physique is associated with that in your head, you know, a vision. And then you look at some of the people out on the golf tour and it's like, I don't know. And you can even take that to baseball occasionally, you know? So I guess it's whatever is in your head about what's an athlete. By that definition, yes, I think bodybuilders are definitely athletes. Could they do sprints? Could they, you know, do other things? Maybe not, but that doesn't mean that they're not athletic in their own, you know, sport.
Yes. Yeah, correct. I think you hit on that perfectly. I was just looking up the definition of athletic. Just because I think that's also like, that's the difference where I agree bodybuilders are athletes based on that definition for sure. And it's funny because then you're getting into race car drivers and all of that. I would say, or, you know, it's funny. Like I would say race car drivers are athletes because of the training I've seen them do. So for example, like the forces that they have on their neck, at like the training they have to do to prevent their necks from getting injured, like all of the training that the grip strength training, the core training they have to do, that's what makes them an athlete, I think. And that's what makes it like I think that's what makes them an athlete, not necessarily the sport or what they're doing per se, but the training that is required in order to make it happen.
That's a great point.
I think that, for example, like a pool or like billiards, that's not an athlete. I don't think that's an athlete. That's a skill. And I would put, I don't think chess is an athlete, right? Like, I don't think that. What I would say is, yes, bodybuilders I consider an athlete. Golf, I consider an athlete. For example, like golf, I think they're an athlete. Again, I think the act of golf is more of a skill, but there are athletic components that you absolutely need, like the speed, the power, the mobility, the strength in order to, like, there are skill components. Obviously, I think golf is I'm so bad at golf. It's wild. And there are people who are way weaker than me in the gym who can hit the ball way further than me because of their skill at doing that. But they need to train in order to really be able to perform at the highest level.
And my cousin's a great example of this because he's older than me, and he's at one point in time has been one of the top senior. I mean, he's a super senior now or whatever they call him. I don't even know, but you're really old kind of thing. And he still trains all the time. Yeah. Trains all the time so he can still get out there and be competitive and all that. So a lot of training that you don't necessarily see when they're out on the course.
I think oftentimes it's the training behind the scenes that defines whether or not they're an athlete, not necessarily the what they're doing to display the sport. Yeah. Right. So billiards, as far as I know, you don't need to be training super hard or even doing a lot of very specific strength training or mobility training in order to be a great billiards player. Great billiards player, you play billiards. Great chess player, you play chess. To be a great NASCAR driver, there's a lot of training you have to do on the back end to make sure you're safe and strong enough. To be a great golfer, there's a lot of training you have to do to make sure you don't get injured, to make sure you're fast enough, explosive enough, all of that. In order to be a great bodybuilder, there's an unbelievable amount of training that you have to do in order to look that way on stage.
Yeah.
What I will say, though, is that if we're looking from an athletic perspective, who is a bodybuilder athletic? I think on the continuum of athletic, they're not very athletic.
Yeah.
And when I think about athletic, what does athletic mean? I think in terms of movement, I think an athlete embodies as many possible characteristics of speed, power, strength, acceleration, agility. If we look at a well-rounded athlete, they can do the most number of things very, very well. That's a well-rounded athlete. A bodybuilder is not a well-rounded athlete. They are very specialized in that one specific thing. So they're very good at lifting weights. But if we get them sprinting, Probably not. If we get them, like, they're checking their agility, movement, directional change. There are so many things that they're jumping, probably on average, not anywhere near as good as a football player's or a soccer player's, lacrosse player's. There are many different, I think on this continuum of athletes, they are not anywhere near the highest level. I think they're on the lower end of athletic overall.
No, I like that. I think you explained that really well. And it does make you think about what they're displaying versus what it took to get them there.
Yes,
I mean,
correct.
and for all sports, really, but for
Yes.
that, for bodybuilding in particular, yeah.
I think you brought up a really interesting point as well in regards to, like, what do they look like? There are, I think bodybuilders actually create this idea that an athlete is supposed to be shredded and like, if we look at some of the best athletes in the world, like, who are way more athletic than bodybuilders, they're not, the vast majority are not shredded like them at all. So, for example, I mean, some of the greatest tennis players of all time, Venus and Serena Williams, they're not shredded at all. They have so much muscle, it's fucking wild, but, like, they're not shredded. And in fact, I think being shredded would cause them to have more issues because they would have to reduce their calorie intake so much. Like, any bodybuilder who's been on stage and competing would tell you that they probably felt like shit when they were competing because they were so low body fat, right? So we could look at one of the greatest boxers of all time, Andy Ruiz Jr. Like, he's super fat. Like, he's super fat. You could look up Andy Ruiz Jr. We could look at Tyson Fury, like, pretty fucking fat, right? And there are other boxers who are very lean and shredded. But when we're looking at bodybuilding, there's no bodybuilders who are on stage. There's no high-level bodybuilders who are fat, right? They're not, because in order, at least not when they step on stage, because for that high-level sport, you need to be shredded all the time. But if you look at other sports, baseball, football, boxing, like, the range of aesthetics is gargantuan, but the range of athleticism is minuscule.
You know, and that's so interesting because I feel like when you use the word athletic, that's a little different. That changes things a little bit,
Yes, correct.
as opposed to athlete.
Yes.
I think athletic is the key word. When I think of an athlete, the first thing that pops into mind is somebody who, I don't know, they run, like even a sprinter.
Yep.
That's the first thing that pops into my mind. I know it goes
Correct.
well beyond that, but I think that initial vision is what takes us down the road of, well, who's athletic, or who's an athlete, who's not an athlete, you
Yeah.
know, all that. But I think your point about being athletic is well pointed out. I think that, yeah, that's a big difference.
Yeah, I think anyone can be an athlete because they specialize in an athletic event. So I think bodybuilding is an athletic event in terms of the training you need to do it. But if we're looking at who is athletic, I think I look at someone, well, who can change sports and still be good or proficient at that sport, right? So a bodybuilder couldn't go and compete in many other sports, but many other sports could go into bodybuilding and do very, very well, right? Or, like, if I look at a football player, like a running back, they could go and compete in powerlifting. They could go and compete in bodybuilding. They could go and compete in boxing. They could go and compete in broad jumping. They could do so many different things because they're so well-rounded and athletic overall. But if you're an athlete, all you have to do is specialize in one thing, and now you're considered an athlete.
Yes,
It doesn't
yes, yes,
mean that you're
yes.
well-rounded athletic.
Yes,
Yeah.
that's nail on the head on that. Absolutely.
All right. I know you have, wait, what time is it? Okay. 8:50. All right. So you've got a couple minutes left before you got it, 'cause you're getting interviewed. All right. You know what? So we'll quickly say this. So I got a question from Stefan Joy. They asked, do you think it's possible to have an unhealthy relationship with your fitness tracker?
Yeah, definitely. I think people get obsessed with, I mean, steps is a great example. I think people can be obsessed with that. I mean, I think tracking steps is great if you tend to not move a lot. And this is something that will get you up off the couch and moving, do it, do it, do it, do it. But then I see the other end of that spectrum of people that are obsessing over, I didn't get 10,000 steps. I need to walk back up and down my hallway for, you know, 5 minutes to get those extra 200 steps or whatever. And yep. then if they don't close a ring or whatever you're using, yeah, it makes them like all, you know, off, you know, and I just think that you can become obsessed with anything like that. Weighing, correct. I mean, all of the things, right? And trackers too, but for the most part, I mean, I use a tracker. I don't even know what half of the stuff is on here. I use it for a couple things, but I feel like they're super helpful. But if the thought of not using a tracker sends you through the roof in a mm-hmm. state of panic, mm-hmm. Then we probably have crossed over that line, I think, you know?
Completely agree. That's such a great point. If not using it makes you anxious, that's a problem.
Yeah.
I think if not completing what you've arbitrarily decided as like, this is what I need to do, or even not arbitrarily, let's say you want to get 7,500 steps a day and there's a day where you're not getting that many and like you just keep checking your watch and you're really nervous, that's a problem.
Yeah.
That's a problem. And that is an unhealthy relationship with your fitness tracker. It should be something that gives you data, just like the scale. It gives you data over the long term. It can help hold you accountable over the long term, but it shouldn't be causing you anxiety.
Yeah. And
the moment it starts to cause you anxiety, now it is unhealthy.
Period. Totally agree with that. 100%.
I don't think anxiety, and this I would have to talk with a mental health therapist to really get a better understanding of this. I don't think anxiety inherently means unhealthy. I think anxiety is a normal human emotion, but chronic anxiety over something, that's when it becomes an issue. And if you are chronically anxious, or even if on a day-to-day basis, that watch is making you feel anxious or is causing you to be worried, yeah, now you've got an unhealthy relationship with it.
Yep, totally agree.
Susan, where can people find you?
Susan Niebergall Fitness, most everywhere. And that's N-I-E, by the way. And it's not Susanne Bergall. It's Susan Niebergall. That's starting to come back, by the way.
I'll put your Instagram in the show notes. Susan, I love you.
Love you.
I know you're about to get interviewed for Insider, so I'll let you go. But I love you very much. Have an amazing, amazing day. And I'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye. Love you.